Buenas tardes.
Good afternoon.
Bueno, vamos a empezar. Gracias.
Okay, let's commence. Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to this press conference of the film Manda Huevos. It's a film, it's a special projection within the official section of this edition of the film festival. To talk about the film, we've got the director, Diego Galán, and the actress, Carmen Machi, who in this case, in this film, she is the narrator and she guides you through what this special documentary wants to talk to us about. Diego, I'm not too sure whether you want to, before we commence, talk us about how the film started, because it's a sequel of the other film that you made with Barefoot in the Kitchen. Yes, I'm glad to, but before, I want to highlight the presence of the producer, Esther García, who's hiding in the corner there under a wig, and the documentalist, Juan Sánchez, who's another wig, which is not his, but somebody else, a friend of his. But apart from this, the film stems from an idea that occurred to a Frenchman. The Barefoot in France was seen a lot in France, and it continues, and there were a lot of presentations in festivals and cities, different cities, and a viewer said, why don't you make a film with, because Barefoot in the Kitchen is how Spanish film has seen the evolution of women. I thought it was a film that wasn't convenient to talk about men in film, because women have a collective struggle, they've got objectives to achieve, and they do it collectively, and plus they're in fashion, whereas men collectively, they didn't have any claims to make, and so therefore I didn't see any interest in it. But it stuck in my mind, that proposal that was made by that person, and slowly but surely with quite a few problems, with a lot of difficulties, I convinced the producers, Enrique Cerezo and El Deseo, to produce the film, just like they'd done with the previous film, Barefoot in the Kitchen. As of there, basically, I started to work for a couple of years and editing for 1 year, and this is the result that you've just seen on the screen. The idea for Carmen Machi to be the narrator was the clearest thing I had in my mind, because Carmen, she's an extraordinary actress that I think all of you know and have seen before, and she's like a chameleon. She's a dramatic, she can do drama with a lot of power in some of the roles that she played, like the film La Puerta Abierta, The Open Door, or she's also comical, which is extraordinary, and in this case, the mixture of both aspects, I thought, were ideal for that narrator off camera, the voice off camera, because she's got a voice which is not crystalline, but it's more like a warrior a voice, and she's got a sense of humor that she gives to the sentences that she reads that may give her an extent, provide something extraordinary to it. We gave her a teaser of the project, first of all, and she said, straight away she said yes, albeit she didn't know she was going to narrate with her voice off camera. But she got wholeheartedly into the project, and I've always said that she liked it a lot. I don't think she's lying, but as an actress, you never know. No, I don't lie. I'm not lying in this case. Well, if there are any questions, are there any further questions? Any questions at all? Perhaps, Carmen, could you add what it meant for you to be a narrator and to read the narrative off camera? Well, it's a gift, it's a privilege for me to form part of this project, which has become a reality. And all of a sudden, I feel that I form part of the Spanish filmography more than ever, because it's very powerful and quite beautiful what Diego Galán, along with the producers, have carried out with all of the crew that have made it possible. Because it's difficult, it's much more difficult than what it seems, albeit it's Diego was macerating things and organizing things for a long time, but to provide a voice to this narration or narrative, I couldn't do what I wanted to do. I was directed by Diego Galán. I feel an actress, just like an actress, and you know that a painting is worth 1,000 words, but I had to give words to these images. It's not that simple. And Dio directed me with a firm hand and also with the voice and firm hand of Esther García, the producer. Is that true or not? We all form part of this team or crew. That, no, no, do this voice this way, do it that way. It's very important how each of the nuances of the images that you announce, the image that's going to appear, and you've got to be absolutely truthful and coherent and consequent with what you're going to, what's going to be seen. And Diego had it very clear in his mind, and he gave me this Manda Huevos film that makes me very happy. And to be here and to present the film here is, I feel very proud to do so and to be here. And I like it. I wasn't lying. I liked it very much. I was quite surprised. Albeit I saw the teaser, and then we had to provide a voice. I always said that Diego Galán was doing it very well himself, because he does a great job. And he said, but you're doing very well. You've got a voice like on a newsreel program. And he didn't know that he had a voice like on a newsreel. I said that as a compliment, because he announced very well. And he played a lot of emphasis and with a powerful voice. But with this bubble, what surprised me the most and astonished me the most is the cinematographic document that this is. Films that I didn't even know existed, and if they existed, it's as if I'd seen all of those that you see on this film, Manda Huevos. The little section, the little minimum sequence that you see is practically the definition of an entire film. I think there's extraordinary work behind this, and an example not only of the people who like films and those that work in films, and but also viewers. It's thankful, for example, we've got to be grateful that this film has been produced. So I feel very happy to have participated in Manda Huevos. I have a recording, sound recording, that I'll send you one day of every time that she says in the film, Manda Huevos. So therefore she says it with so many nuances, and it's all very different. It's a great spectacle to see, hear you say Manda Huevos a whole afternoon and in 1,000 different ways. And I didn't, something that I didn't know that can be done, but I want to see that the film. You think it's stupid, but Manda Huevos could have been called, it's a man's thing. That's what it was going to be called at the beginning. The first project is, it's a man's thing. And we use the Soberano Cognac advertisement, which was, es cosa de hombres, it's a man's thing, a man's drink. And so therefore we thought Manda Huevos was a much better film title. Any questions? Yes? I'm sorry, I can't hear you without the microphone. Yes, I'm getting deaf. You talking about claiming and revindicating men, and did you establish any limits to editing the film, for example? What surprised me a little is that when choosing a scene of mala educación, bad manners, you chose the film, the scene in the pool, instead of the broken head and the child harassment, and which can't be seen too much in the film. And I would like you to talk a bit about this, about dealing with the issue of child harassment and the role of men. Excuse me, I'm a bit deaf, and Carmen, could you repeat what is just said? Why did you choose the maleducación, the fragment of maleducación, and why did you choose the pool scene? And because precisely that one, and not to talk about the sexual harassment to children, why didn't you focus upon that in the film and you'd use this pool scene? Well, there was another sequence in Bad Manners, Maleducación, and we rejected it, and it was precisely had to do with child harassment. But there's another moment in the documentary where there's a priest, San Ignacio de Loyola, surrounded by children, to which directly he touches them, albeit it's not his intention, the people that made the film at that time, when there's an that he gets, and he talks about touching children, because I'm not too sure, when we talked about homosexuality, and that's where the fragment in Maleducación, the film, I thought the pool scene was much better, where Tere Martinez looks at the genitals of Gael García Bernal, Fede Martinez is excellent, and she has such an intention in the way she looks at him. And I think that talking about homosexual relations, and we're listening a narrative which was with a funny song which is called Por Detrás, behind, behind, from behind, from behind. And that's it was much more efficient that issue than child harassment by priests, an issue which is not dealt with in the film, apart from that little nuance of Santiago de Loyola surrounded by little children and saying beatific barbarities to them. Every time we choose a fragment, you reject others, and sometimes when you choose, you try to choose the best one, but that was the option I took in this case. I can't really say anything more. Any further questions? Yes, over there. I would like to ask Diego Galán, 30 years ago, it was the first time as the director of the festival. How do you see yourself coming back as a director of a film, whether you're nervous, and how do you see this child that you were the father of also as well? Well, I've come back to the festival in many ways, different ways. Obviously, the first time I was a director was 30 years ago, 30 years ago. How barbaric. And it was astonishing. And then for a certain amount of time, and then I've formed part of a suspect in the organizing committee up until 2010, but I've come back presenting books that I've written, some relating to the festival or presenting other documentaries. It's not the first time I come as a director of images or a film to this festival. This is the first time I come to the official section. And so thank you very much for the people who have selected films that I've come here. Even with A Barefoot in the Kitchen, which was presented in the Cannes Film Festival, it was also projected here. But these are different activities, and everyone is exciting and has its moment in time. And I don't think we have to cry about any others that in the past. These are much better. It's better to come to present a film than to direct the film festival. It's much more relaxing, albeit that I've not been able to eat as comfortably as I would like to have lunch today. But nevertheless, I think the film festival in 1986, up until the present moment, has evolved extraordinarily well, very powerfully as well. In 1986, I remember we had problems to fill up the Victoria Eugenia Theatre, and we had to give out free tickets, and I used it. We were even asking for the whores in Icharondo to come in to fill in the seats because the city had turned its back to the film festival. And slowly but surely, and with the city and the journalists, it was an extraordinary adventure. And to see that everything is full, and that the whores come along of their own account, they pay for the tickets. But the change is so marvelous that's taken place. It's grown so much. In my opinion, perhaps even too much, but that's my critical opinion. I'm not too sure that I understand your question, but I hope I've answered your question. It's because I'm a bit deaf. I'm sorry. Any further questions? Yes, over here. Hi, good afternoon. I loved the film. My question is, this colonial cinema and films that were made in the north of Morocco during the colonial period, these films provide images of the Spanish man and the Spanish macho. Do you know what I'm talking about when I refer to these images? Okay, my translator, personal translator in Morocco. There was a colonialism type films made at that time in Morocco, and he's talking about this film, talks about men and the machos, Spanish male. And the question is, I imagine that you know about these films, this colonial films that were made, and I'll give you titles. The Song of Aisha, the Moroccan Romance. And these films, you don't believe they could form part of this film because I'm from the north of Morocco. And that's the question. I'm from Morocco, And I know there are magnificent films, Maniwa Sin Dios, and many other colonial films, but it wasn't an issue that was up to us to deal with in this story. The missionary films that we have included, and they had an activity, the missionary films, which was to be seen by other Spaniards, albeit they didn't make it to Morocco, it is a Catholic propaganda type cinema. The post-war cinema and films in Spain were dominated by priests and the army and the military, and this lasted for a long time, albeit the priests continued to do so, control things, that is to say. It's not a story of a history of Spanish cinema. It can't be. And obviously there are a lot of things missing. And what I'm more concerned about is that there is too much, but missing other things that haven't been included in the film, it's something that we can't cover absolutely everything, that is to say. The intention was to, above all, with the excuse of using a man, which is an excuse, to tell the story of the country at the same time, to tell how the Spanish films have represented it, and to see how we've evolved from the 1940s, at the beginning of the 1940s, where men, we had to be half monks and half soldiers. José Antonio Primo de Rivera said this, up until the present day that we're living in and we are suffering, albeit the country has evolved quite a lot and in many things have been improved. Story of the country with the excuse of using man as the subject. And I think it was the previous documentary, Barefoot in the Kitchen, used as an excuse women. But as I say, the struggle of women is a bit more objective, much more specific than that of men, which is a bit more diffuse. I'm getting a bit more involved in answering your question, just in case nobody else wants to ask another question. Any further questions? I'm going to ask you a question, another question. Easy, I hope so. I would like you to talk about the humor in the film, because you're dealing a period of Spain which is not too happy, but you're using it, using humor, just like in Carmen's work through her voice. Could you talk about Carmen's work? Is important because with her humor that she uses and the voice, when she says, it's not the Spanish macho or male is not always that sexual beast that he's made out to be. I don't know whether she does that because of her own experience, but she does that quite intentionally. Humor is of fundamental importance in everything. Otherwise, if we don't laugh at things, well, go back to bed. And that's what I would say. So in this case, it's enormous what is shown on the screen. These fragments of Spanish cinema, it's so brutal what we see on the screen, our past, and even our present. And unless you distance yourself or move back a bit, step aside, or make some room for humor, with humor. And I remember somebody told me, a radio presenter said, well, I saw it and I wanted to leave Spain. I said, well, it's not that much, but at least, for example, we can still laugh about it nowadays. And I'm not too sure what would happen in Switzerland, but humor in this case is of fundamental importance in this type of work, and we thought about it from the beginning, that's to say, with humor, yeah. And Carmen's humor is of fundamental importance. And I think there's a high percentage comedy films, there's a majority of comedy films, there's a lot of fun in, you see in some of the scenes in the film. I think Raphael singing like a friar or dressed as a priest, and he talks about the convent, and I think that's very funny, but it is true. There are many moments that are of the Spanish comedy are included in the film. And I wanted to ask you, how did films like that get through censorship? Because that really draws my attention. There were films where there was censorship and they made it past the censorship. Why is that? Because those that the people censoring things didn't realize it, because, well, I think they've censored a lot of censorship went on. Well, censorship back then in 1941, for example, it's different to the censorship in 1970s, where Franco was still alive, but it had relaxed itself quite extraordinarily, and we could deal with subjects that you couldn't deal with in the past. When comedy, when the cameras come out to the street and starts to talk about reality in films, near-realistic films and dramatic films, and even Fernán Gómez said that they take cameras outside with a lot of sense of humor, as of reality forming part of images in cinema, censorship releases itself because it can't hide it, just a little bit, not too much, but just a little bit. So therefore, censorship has lasted up, the official censorship up until very few years ago, and the non-official censorship up until 1980s, the crime of Cuenca, Rocío, they were prohibited even during the beginning of the Spanish democracy. Censorship doesn't completely disappear because on TV there are films that are not being projected because of censorship. There's a film by Pedro Olea, which is called The Conspiration, upon the coup d'etat, that is to say, against the beginning of the Civil War. It's not being shown. And this is censorship, it's not due to any other reason. But that's brutal censorship of Francoism, of the Franco period, has fortunately disappeared. And many films, I'm not too sure which one you're referring to, no, but I think in general, what surprises me, because there were things that were truly quite clearly evident, that they were criticizing things of the dictatorship, and it surprised me, the date of the film, and I said, well, this is incredible. Didn't they realize that the people that were censoring the films? No, but you're censoring. Sometimes they realized it, or they took years to approve the film. It took a long time. Fernán Gómez films are used here, like La Vida Alrededor or La Vida Por Delante. These are films had censorship problems, not only in the editing, but also in the time to be premiered. And not only was it official censorship that prohibited the films, but also the owners of the film theatres or the distributors of the films. Fernando Fernán Gómez did a film, and it took ages because it was too dark. That is to say, as long as you can see it, that is to say, I don't know why. There are a lot of things that they did in order to censor films. We've got time for one final question, if anyone is in, would like to. Otherwise, I'll ask the question in order to finish. You were saying, Diego, that where Barefoot in the Kitchen was quite successful and interested France a lot. It was very good and worked very well in France. It's something that might seem, one, a very local type story, for it to awaken that interest abroad because of the film discovers Spanish history via the film. I don't know. I always thought with Barefoot in the Kitchen was a film exclusively for Spanish audiences, but when it was premiered in the Cannes Film Festival, and Antonio Ordonez, who was there, at the end of the film, when it was shown, there were a lot of foreigners who were very interested in the film, and among them, the French people who bought it straight away for it to be distributed in France. And it's gone to festivals in France, and as I said before, to talk about the film, and the discussions and the press conferences are very intense. A Spanish woman says in a low voice, "Mom, what a shame to be Spanish after seeing the film. Don't tell them we're Spanish." But the French audience was very interested in the film, and they paralleled this to their own situation. Obviously, the dictatorship in Spain differentiates Spain to all of the rest of our surrounding countries, but macho, sexist, and sexual repression and issues of the victimism of women is common and generalized, and that's what they liked. And the discussions were very interesting because, remember, a woman who was very elegant, elegantly dressed, and she said, "Women didn't vote in Spain." Women voted in Spain in 1933, much earlier than France, which was 95%. She said, "That's not possible, sir." "Yes, it is possible. But women stopped voting." "Yes, so did men, because there weren't elections for 40 years. So these brought about the participation of other people. It's received a lot of attention in France. Barefoot in the Kitchen is used in schools and high schools for teaching young children, which is, I think, much more interesting to be done here in Spain, because at the end of the day, it talks about Spain, the film. Yes, that's great. And in DVD, and it seems to working, and it works in DVD as well. And Manda Huevos, the French already want it without even seeing it, so therefore that's great. Perhaps we might have I might be a French director instead of a Spanish. I hope it's just you're lucky with this film as well as the previous. I think you've got to go because you've got the presentation of the film now in the Victoria Eugenia. Thank you very much for the both of you for being here. Good luck with the film. Thank you.